The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Hey, welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollock, and Kevin Negandhi with you. We'll talk about the Texas-Oklahoma fallout, what the guys think about the Clemson machine rolling, and that are we looking at potentially a 500 season at LSU and why that's a real possibility. But first, we've got a studio update. Alabama just scored again in Oxford against Ole Miss because it was one of those Saturdays where the Big 12 gets crushed for no defense, but the explosions everywhere. I mean, to the ACC and what we saw from Mack Brown. But I want to begin here, Herbstreit, with Saban and Kiffin at 68 first downs, over 1,300 yards, 15 touchdowns, 63-48, the final Alabama. It's a game that would make David Pollock cry. We'll get his thoughts in a moment. But when I was doing these ABC updates with you guys while you're calling the Clemson game, I sat on about 15 minutes where I had to adjust four straight highlights because they kept on scoring over and over and over again. And to me, the shock was not that Alabama was scoring points. It was that Lane Kiffin was doing whatever he wanted offensively against that Bama defense. What were your impressions?
I think that's the big thing that I took away from it. I fully expected Mac Jones and Sarkisian and the weapons that Alabama has. I think everybody thought that they'd kind of go up and down the field. I think a lot of people wanted to see Matt Corral and Lane Kiffin. How would they be able to score on that Alabama defense, at least consistently? And I know they've been a kind of a thorn in the side of people so far in the SEC, but, you know, we all look at Alabama and think that they're at a different level. And I think it was a combination of two things, going back and watching the game. First, you have to give Jeff Lebby and Lane and their offense a lot of credit. You know, having that system that they run and then having a quarterback that can run it and throw it obviously makes them a tough offense to prepare for. But I don't know, guys, if you watch Alabama defense and it's a really, really good defense and you walk away and people put points on the board, that's one thing. But this Alabama defense still trying to find themselves. And I know they have five stars all over the place, but I don't, David, they got exposed on so many different levels. Their tackling was horrendous. They were out of position. They didn't handle the tempo well. They didn't set the edges to the defense at all. They looked to be very confused. They didn't hold up in man coverage. You know, in that offense, they're going to put you on islands. They lost a lot of those matchups. Again, I'm not trying to take away from Ole Miss, but I was more frustrated by what I saw from Alabama.
So you're saying they did a lot right. I think you covered just about everything that could go wrong and that went wrong. But when you look at Bama, the thing that's confusing for me is I don't understand when one person goes across the formation or two people move or shift in motion. I don't understand why five people move. That to me is puzzling. I think you can create a structure of a defense and not have to do that. And you're watching, you know, and Lane knew it right away, by the way. First play, he goes trips. Right away, that bunch now goes from out wide to in close, and everybody switches a spot. So now the point man is a different person. And so now you knew Alabama was going to play man coverage. Now you made them think, and then the guy goes in motion, and then you make your backers bump and think, and then you come back. And just Lane did an amazing job of attacking what Bama typically has struggled with, stopping when Alabama struggles with a mobile quarterback and tempo. And Alabama couldn't get lined up fast enough a lot of times because their tempo was so fast. And then the shifts, the motions, the pop passes, the play action, so many things to look at where it makes you think very fast. And Bama's the defense that wants to be in the perfect position all the time. And it struggled to me. And I didn't understand why we can't be more simplistic defensively and not have to try to do so much because Lane and company had their way. And listen, that being said, this week doesn't mean Georgia can create that. Georgia isn't that. You know, Georgia doesn't have Corral at quarterback who's a running back that can throw the football. Georgia doesn't live in a tempo world. So don't just – all the styles make fights. And that's what you're seeing in the SEC now is you got more team – you get more guys like Lane that run spread and more passing, and you saw Burrow have so much success. It's going to be even more of a nightmare now because you're going to have to match up with so many different systems and styles. And – and let's put it this way. Kiffin had his way with Saban in that defense.
It's scary, though, but what Lane Kiffin could do with none of these guys are his players. Give him a year or two. Obviously, they're going to have to fix it on the defensive side and bring in some JUCO players for a quick fix.
But that's not an easy fix, though, Kevin.
Well, you're right. You're right.
You can talk about that all you want about like, we're going to go get some JUCO players. JUCO players are JUCO for a reason a lot of times.
I'm saying big picture here, there is buzz now. Lane brings the buzz, but he can recruit. This is kind of a statement, even though they lose, but they went toe-to-toe for 3.5 quarters till they ran out of steam. And there is a certain point where you're like, oh, my God, are they going to pull this off? And we were midway through the fourth quarter. And that's saying a lot for him and his adjustment in this offense and everybody adapting to what he wants to do style-wise as you bring up the style points.
Yeah, I hear you. And now this doesn't make me bank on Lane Kiffin being very successful at Ole Miss either, though. I think Lane can coach offense whether you put him in any – whether you put him 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years in the future. Lane Kiffin's going to be great on offense, and he's going to do exceptionally well. I don't think that is going to determine his success at Ole Miss. And this isn't like a statement to me. Kirk would have talked about it on game day. He knew the offense would do well for both sides. You know, we knew they would do well. Now, I didn't think Alabama would look that poor. But, you know, Lane's going to be able to coach offense as well as anybody in the country year in and year out.
And I think a bigger thing to take away to me, not just from, I guess, that game, but just from the entire weekend, is probably what a lot of people around the country are talking about. And you touched on it to start this is – what in the world has happened to the SEC's defense? You know, if this happened in the Big 12, which it does every week, we just kind of roll our eyes and say, man, what the heck? Is that great offense or bad defense? You know, if you're a Big 12 fan, you say it's great offenses. And if you're kind of just an outsider watching, you're like, man, that's hard to watch, the tackling. Well, Alabama 63, Ole Miss 48. Georgia put it on heavy on Tennessee's. They scored 44. 41-38 with A&M in Florida. Auburn was somewhat of a shootout. Missouri and LSU was 45-41. I mean, it's bizarre to see this conference having these kind of results. And I think it's a few things. David said that more and more guys like Sark and Lane Kiffin in the SEC are coaching offense. The overall trend of style of offense has changed over the last 5 to 7 years. That's true. But I think it's the COVID. I think it's not having spring ball. I think it's not having a normal summer. I think it's not having a normal camp and hitting. I think it's not having a normal week of practice when you get ready to face an opponent. It's more walkthrough. It's more, you know, showing
Zoom meetings still.
And yeah, you're in meetings. You're not hitting people as much. So, and then I think it's less buy-in, honestly. I mean, when I watch some of these guys tackle, or I should say not tackle, it's like the Cowboys, that dude, Xavier Woods, that said, you know, what do you expect us to be 100% all the time? And it's like, what are you talking about? You know, we're in the NFL. And if you watch the Cowboys, it's not scheme all the time. It's just they're not buying in. They just don't look like it's 11 guys that want to run to the ball and hold up their end of the bargain. And when I watch some of these SEC defenses, I look at guys like Stingley right now, who's a great talent. He has zero interest in tackling, zero interest in being accountable in that regard. And if your best players are doing that, that's going to filter down. So I think it's a combination of COVID, quarantine, style practicing, not really buying in, not really caring as much as a group. Because when you watch Clemson, you see buy-in. You see what it's supposed to be. I don't even care who's on the field. I don't even care the results. You just see guys flying to the football, taking pride and being there for each other, having each other's back, hitting people, being sound with the gaps and playing man-to-man and guys helping each other up. And I don't know, man, the way I grew up, that's how defenses play football. And when I watch what's going on, yeah, it's great offense, tough to defend, but these defenses, I can't even imagine what it's like watching film for them because it's embarrassing.
I can't agree with you more. And I did a little podcast thing this morning too. And I said the exact same thing. You can tell, man, it makes a difference. It's this year as first of all, Kirk, and I don't know if you agree with this or not. I'd be interested to see if you do. I've never, I've never seen the amount of laziness on defense as I have this year. Yeah. I've never seen the amount of lack of guys wanting to run to the football. It's making me want to rip my hair out. I mean, it literally, it infuriates me. People are, these kids are out of shape. Like, and it's not one conference more than the other. There's a lot of kids that are out of shape, apparently. But, you know, you're not doing in-face, face-to-face, Zoom. You know, most of your, a lot of your meetings are still Zoom. And I just, there's a level of accountability that's not there yet. And it's bad to watch. It's ugly to watch. It's not fun. There's a few teams in the country. Like, listen, Georgia's playing great defense. They're flying around in the football. Like you said, Clemson's playing great defense. But just the laziness tells me something about whatever this was or whatever's going on now too, because I can't stand watching kids not fly to the football. If I was a coach, I'd be getting the next guy in there.
The question is, who do you have depth wise? Right. And that's part of the COVID conversation. Do we have enough guys healthy enough? And you look at what Virginia Tech had to deal with and go figure, you bring up all the scoring in the SEC and Mississippi State's offense can't generate any points, held to two in that game against Kentucky. And you sit there scratching your head like, wait a second, this is the air raid. Now everybody else is scoring. I come back to what Herbie said about Stingley. It is such a big difference. And I understand they lost a lot of talent, but it is such a big drop off from a year ago to what, when you watched that LSU defense and the breakdowns and the communications and then the Bo Pelini picture walking off the field. He's just taking it on the chin left and right. But that extends to what we've seen from Florida's defense. Todd Grantham's secondary is struggling big time. And that's a big win for Jimbo Fisher at home, a top five win in the SEC, first time for him at A&M. But you sit there and you scratch your head because they have an elite offense, and these defenses are letting everybody else down across the board. And I wanted to get your thoughts about, you know, Florida now coming into a situation where they got LSU, and what's going on with Ed Orgeron and Bo Pelini and this LSU team at 1-2 for the first time since 1994, Herbie, what do you expect to see from this Tigers team going into the Swamp?
I don't know. I have no idea. They're giving up 32 points a game is all I know. And you're right. I mean, there's a lot to get into on a lot of these teams. With LSU, it's been really just a frustrating thing because of the style of what they did with Dave Aranda. And yeah, let's not forget he had some pretty special players on that side of the ball, but LSU recruits well enough that you would expect them against Mississippi State, Vandy, and Missouri that they would be holding their own, right? Like if we just said, hey guys, like spring football rules, playing one high, we're going to play cover three, we're going to play man free. That's it. That's all you're allowed to play on defense in this spring game, okay? We're just trying to get a look, give the fans a little something to watch. That's all you're allowed to play. That's it. No blitzing. If they just played that, if they went back and played these three games, I would love to see the production, see the scores of the game.
They might win.
Honestly.
Yeah.
That's it. Those are the only two coverages, 3-1. That's it. Now, they held Vandy. I know Vandy's not having a great year. But Mississippi State, you know, they obviously couldn't figure that out. That was a big story that week. But Missouri, who in the world would have thought that the game gets moved to Columbia and they're going to give up 45 to that offense? That I'm not saying it's bad, but again, if you go mano a mano, LSU's got plenty of guys. But it just goes back to what we just talked about with their defense and where they go from here, David. They've got Trask and Pitts and company on the road at the Swamp this weekend. You know, you would think this is going to be a much tougher offense to prepare for from what they've already seen.
Missouri put on a clinic for them. I mean, it was bad. It was really bad. But I will say, I love what Missouri did. It was fun to watch. I mean, it was very creative from triple option to flea flickers to. I mean, they really gave LSU tons of looks. Confused LSU. It shouldn't have confused LSU, and it's infuriating to watch again defensively all the busted assignments and busted coverages. So a couple things I took away from watching LSU's defense: a ton of finger pointing, a ton of hey, what happened, bro? Like where were you? You were what's going on here? And then a lack of effort. And listen, you win a championship. What do we always marvel at with Dabo Sweeney and with Nick Saban? Somehow keeping those guys edge, right? Like keeping them to fight and keeping the hammer down and not resting on their laurels. To me, LSU looks like they're pretty content. Like we won a championship. We were awesome. We might not be good this year, but you know what? We won a championship. That's frustrating to watch from a standpoint of a defense that should be so much better, that a corner in Stingley that should be taking away half the field and looking even better than he did as a true freshman. And now you got a lot of finger pointing, lack of effort, and lack of caring.
Orgeron saying he believes in Pelini, wants the defense simplified. I'm not asking you guys to go, win-loss. I'm just going to bring this up on October 12th. And they got Florida next, South Carolina. Anything could happen, of course. But South Carolina, Auburn, Alabama, Arkansas, and Sam Pittman, and that team plays hard for him regardless. They got robbed in that Auburn game. Texas A&M, and then Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. Right now, it's a scary thought, but if they get to 500, that's a successful season considering how they have started so far, 1-2, and the way they've looked. Because Miles Brennan has been decent, but when you score 41 points at Mizzou, you are expected to win that game, and they didn't get the W. And now the big question remains is, can they get to potentially a 5-5 record to finish out the season? I don't see where they can get those five wins.
And I would just add with something that David said about they look like a team that's kind of like, hey, we want our championship. I think it's a combination of that along with, they lost so much. You know, Joe Brady, Dave Aranda, Joe Burrow, all the skill for, other than Marshall around him. It's been widely publicized, everything that they lost in the defensive side of the ball. Jamar Chase opts out in the midst of this pandemic. It almost feels like the body language of the players that are remaining playing are looking like over a fence at all the guys that left, like, wow, you guys got to leave. And
yeah,
you know, that's what it feels like. It just feels like they're like, you expect us to stay here when everyone left. It doesn't feel like they've been backed into a corner and we'll show them. They look they just look like beyond X's and O's. There just seems like there's more going on behind the scenes, behind closed doors, than maybe we realize.
That's well said. And especially bringing up a young man like Stingley, where, you know, a lot of that, the heart of that defense and some of the biggest playmakers are going to the next level. And we're talking about a guy that's going to play on Sundays eventually, and he has to stay there. And the effort, the loafing, and you guys mentioned it, you and Fowler mentioned it on the broadcast. You know, during the Clemson game, I'm in the studio with Booger McFarland. No one bigger when it comes to an LSU backer, and watching that defense with him, you just seething on every single play, and to a point where it's not even fun, like digging in and getting at, you know, ribbing him on these plays, because it's just like, good Lord, this is embarrassing from the LSU standard, not even the 2019, but just the LSU standard through the years. And they've got to find it in their gut and the heart to, hey, do you want to turn around the season? And when we talk about heart, let's go to Arkansas and what Sam Pittman's done. That heartbreaker to Auburn, of course, they missed their extra point. They chased points the rest of the day. The Bo Nix fumbles the snap, tries to clock it, goes backwards, intentional grounding. The ball goes back. I haven't seen a play like that ever. I've never seen you're clocking a ball, then you fumble, and then the ball goes backwards. What were your initial thoughts, Herbie, starting with you, on what you saw from Arkansas against Auburn and a freaky play like that at the end that cost Arkansas?
I got jobbed is what I was thinking, because I picked Arkansas to win the game. Our game was over at that point in the second or third quarter. And I'm watching that was one of the games on the monitor that we have up in the booth. So I'm watching that game very closely. I'm sitting there thinking, here comes Auburn. Here they come. They're going to score to win the game. Darn it. Here we go. You know, you pull, just so you know, you're not cheering against teams or four teams. You completely cheer for your picks. Mm-hmm. Am I right, David? I mean, that's all we do.
Correct. 100%.
We cheer for our picks.
And
so all, here comes Auburn.
The show.
They spike the ball. It's backwards. I'm like, oh my God. They're gonna lose the game on a spike. And then I obviously can't hear the audio. And then I see that they're talking about it, but Auburn escapes with a win in a game that they should have lost. Arkansas is one of the fun stories. I mean, think about how that brand has been off and how long that brand has been off, and the coaches that have been through there. I mean, the Brett Bielema experiment did not work out. Chad Morris experiment did not work out. And here we are just three games in. And it just feels like they got an idea of what they're doing on both sides of the ball. And I think the coordinators that he hired, he brought in Kendrick Briles, he brought in Barry Odom. I mean, they got their players believing and playing with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder and executing very well and giving them a chance to win the game. So I don't think this is a fluke. They're playing too consistently, David, through their first three games to feel like this is a potential fluke.
I think people are listening across the country and they're going, what drugs is Kirk Herbstreit on? Arkansas's 1-2. Why would you be talking about Arkansas being so much better? If you've watched Arkansas the past several years, they haven't even been remotely competitive. You could turn the games off at halftime and go on and like, we could take our prep somewhere else immediately. Like it was over. You know, didn't have an offensive identity whatsoever. You know, Bielema obviously wanted to be ground and pound. Chad Morris wanted to try to do more up tempo, spread it out. But either way, they couldn't get anything from the quarterbacks. And Felipe Franks, I mean, he's never been a phenomenal player. When you go 22-30 for, you know, four touchdowns and no turnovers, more importantly, like you're getting the best version of Felipe. He's getting the best version of his guys. And that's to be commended. And they're competitive. They were competitive with Georgia in the first game. They were obviously could have beaten Arkansas. They beat Mississippi State. So I think when you look at Arkansas, it's not just the record. It's the way they're turning around and being competitive continually, because they were not even a speed bump the past several years.
It's really impressive. And you could see the impact of kids playing tough, or young men playing tough and hard for a coach who's instilling an identity. And you're right, 1-2, and we're talking about them because they should be 2-1. They got robbed in that game against Auburn. And it's time now for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment with Kirk Herbstreit. Let's see where he thinks protection is going to really matter this weekend. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. What do you see so far in the last few weeks?
Yeah, Kevin, every week we take a look to see where the All-State Playoff Predictor is pointing. Remember, the All-State Playoff Predictor projects the top team's chances of making the college football playoff, and I'll be pointing out where protection can really change the game. And remember, get better protected with Allstate. You've never been in better hands. Again, just for people that didn't hear us the last couple weeks, I'm personally just looking at the teams that have actually been playing. Eventually, we'll get to the Big Ten and the Pac-12 once they get involved in the 2020 season. For me right now, I had Bama up ahead of Clemson last week. My rankings are very volatile. You know, I am really kind of floating with what we're seeing. Clemson, to me, is the number one team. Really impressed with what they did to Miami. Georgia, to me, is a more complete team than Alabama right now. So I moved out. I moved Georgia up to 2, moved Bama all the way down to 3. After that, kind of searching for teams, you know, I put, you know, Notre Dame in there at 4, you know, North Carolina and Mack Brown, you know, they're showing that they have the ability to score a lot of points. I know BYU let some points on the board against an inferior opponent, but you know, I think after you get to Notre Dame and North Carolina, you've got 3 or 4 or 5 different teams right now you could probably put in that 5 or 6 spot.
And right now, the playoff predictor is with you with Clemson at 4-0, a 75% chance to make the playoff, 24% chance to win the title, followed by Ohio State, 71% to make the playoff, Bama at 66%, Georgia at 53%, Wisconsin's there at 39%. You got the Pac-12 there with the love at 23%, according to the playoff predictor featuring Oregon, Penn State at 22%, USC at 16%, and then it's Notre Dame. And how about the Big 12, Oklahoma State at 6%? To make the playoff, and then we see the BYU part of the group of 5, and they're at the bottom. We're going to circle them. I see them right now. I see Mack Brown at 1%, sitting there at 3-0, more on the Tar Heels and their offensive explosion on this podcast in a moment. Let's switch here. Let's get out of the SEC a little bit, because we'll talk a little more about, you know, the big matchup Georgia-Alabama later in the week. But I want to focus your thoughts on Oklahoma, Texas, because my first thought here is Sam Ellinger does literally everything. 6 total touchdowns. They're in that 4th overtime. Spencer Rattler looks like he's looked at the trainer, gets a break. Tanner Mordecai comes in midway through. to me, I feel really terrible for Ehlinger. If the way that game was going, I would have gone for two at a certain point if I'm Texas when they tied it up late in the game when they were down by two touchdowns, because just Oklahoma is a better team than Texas, and Ehlinger can only do so much. Your thoughts, Herbie, on what you saw from the Red River rivalry?
You're right. I think as that game went, you got into the latter part of it and we got into overtime. I can't remember if it was the second score. I thought Texas is going to go for the two and try to end it, and decided not to and decided to keep playing. And, just thought maybe they could eventually get a stop, and clearly they couldn't. I do think we got Oklahoma, we were about to leave for dead, right? But at the same time, on our show on Saturday morning, we did talk about how in their two losses, they did have the lead in the fourth quarter in both of those games, even though it hasn't looked good. Biggest difference is Jalen Hurts or Kyler Murray or Baker Mayfield would find a way to win those games in the fourth quarter. And the young guy, Spencer Rattler, while he's been playing well, he hadn't had an opportunity to have some experience and find a way to win those games. Instead, they were finding ways to lose them. But it wasn't as if they were just awful, right? Even the defense. I mean, if you look at them statistically, they're not awful. They had awful moments or critical possessions where they gave up big plays. But they hadn't been really awful. So the way they played in that game, you knew Lincoln Riley would have them fired up in a rivalry game. But I don't know what it is about when Tom Herman and Lincoln Riley get together. No matter who goes up, it always seems to level out at the end, and it always gets competitive, you know? I'm just a fan of the rivalry, fan of that game. I just don't know how good either one of these teams really are when it's all said and done.
No, and two things I think that – listen, I think OU, Spencer Rattler, he's had some adversity. Like, Kirk, you talked about a preseason. He hadn't had any adversity. You know, he's not a transfer. He's not a five-star. Well, he's had it now. And, by the way, he got benched in the first half. Let's call it what it was. He got benched. We can go to the trainer. We can go to whatever we want. I think he was thrown on the sidelines because he refuses to take care of the football. And when he came back in, it was a different Spencer Rattler. He did a better job of taking what the defense gave him, checking the ball down, running the football more and more effectively, and just making sure he didn't make any critical mistakes. Other side of the football, by the way, Sam Ehlinger is a stud. I love everything about him. He's tough. He's a great leader. Sam Ehlinger, if Texas wanted to be back, because so much is on his plate, by the way, he had to run the ball 23 times. That was almost 20 times more than the next guy. I mean, he threw it 53, I think, times, something like that. A bunch is on him. Kirk, he's got to hit those deep balls more consistently. That's the only thing he doesn't do. He consistently leaves big play after big play, in the passing game out there. And he's patient, and he's a great runner, and he doesn't usually turn the football over a ton. He had a couple picks that were bad in this ball game. But, Sam Ehlinger's just – he's really, really good, and he's really, really tough, and he's a really big leader. But if Texas wants to be at that next level – his passing has to continue to get a little bit better and a little bit sharper, and especially down the field passing. In Texas, I know a lot of people had a lot of high hopes for Texas before the season, but recalibration time.
Yeah. And I think the Big 12, everybody wants to say the Big 12's done, all this. I mean, you still have Iowa State. Kansas State's got some issues, obviously, with their quarterback, Skylar Thompson, now being out for the year. But you look at Oklahoma State, we still don't really know enough about them. And you have Oklahoma, who's sitting there at 2-2, Texas at 2-2. You know, I think realistically, it's probably, if anybody's going to make a run, what do you think? It's Iowa State is an option. Is Oklahoma State an option?
Iowa State.
And maybe if Oklahoma wins out, I don't know. I mean, Iowa State's obviously the top dog right now to look at, even though they lost to Louisiana to start the season off.
This podcast during the middle of the week, Herbie, is a Breece Hall podcast, because Pollock is part of that fan club. He is the president of the Breece Hall fan club, and with good reason, because they play physical. And listen, some freak plays, long plays in those three touchdowns that Louisiana scored. I'm not making an excuse. Louisiana won that game in Ames. But, Iowa State, to me, is the cream of the crop right now. Of course, that could change in this conference, but Oklahoma State may be the top 10 team, but I think Iowa State will preserve some sensibility down the road when we look at the big picture. The sensibility, the one thing that's normal, guys, in this whole season, I mentioned last week I felt like Alabama was the most complete team. Let's slow down here for a second, at least for 1 week. Clemson Saturday night, if there's any doubt, I mean, what they did to Miami, this is nothing to do with Miami. This has everything to do with Clemson. And with your eyes, Herbie, you saw them again. Their performance, I was just really impressed. That, and this mentality that Dabo has is, I don't care what the score is. My foot is on this pedal, and this entire team understands that because they take the same identity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like running out of adjectives for Tiger Woods when he was in his prime. That's how I feel about Clemson. I mean, what more can we say about Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne, that combination? What needs to be talked about, and we tried to talk about it leading into the game and then during the game, is when you break in four new offensive line, you break in truly, other than Amari Rodgers, a lot of new faces at wide receiver. T. Higgins and Justin Ross no longer there, so they have all these young guys like Frank Ladson and others that have tremendous potential, and we're starting to kind of see that work itself out. But I think it's just the coaching and how they execute. It's such a high level. Tony Elliott, the offensive coordinator, probably doesn't have his name out there enough. He deserves a lot of credit because he's got a quarterback who's really good, and we all know about it. But you can go back from Taj Boyd to Deshaun Watson to Trevor Lawrence and watch this offense work around its strengths and its playmakers, depending on where those strengths might be. And the way they do it, and they don't make a ton of mistakes, and they keep their foot on the accelerator. And wherever you aren't defensively is where they attack, and they put everybody in conflict, or those edge players in conflict. It's just a great scheme. But the four new offensive linemen, and Trevor's at a different level right now. He's like a coach as a quarterback. And then with Brent Venables and that defense, David, I mean, that was the thing I wanted to see, is against De'Ara King, what could they do? And, oh my God. I mean, Miami, I don't know if Miami was beat in the warmups or what, but Miami's receivers, if you're looking as a Miami fan, where can we grow? Very easy. They need to find receivers who can win one-on-one. And they need linebackers that can play in space. But those receivers had no chance against that secondary and against that pass rush.
Well, you know, it's funny. You mentioned just kind of nonchalantly, you go, well, you know, Tony Elliott's done a great job with Deshaun Watson for 3 years and Trevor Lawrence. I mean, my God, like, yeah, that's nice. That's a good luxury to have. How about you get the best quarterback in the country for six straight seasons? That's pretty solid. And I think speaks to the recruiting. They haven't missed on quarterbacks. Defensively, I don't think it matters, you know, what names guys are on the back of the jerseys or what numbers they wear. They're going to fight their guts out. They're going to compete like crazy. And by the way, every time we start doing this with somebody else in the ACC, and like Louisville got some, you know, got some pub, and North Carolina not there yet,
I said, look out, here they come. Never know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Look out, here they come. And then Miami's in the class and they raise their hand and they start to stand up, and Clemson's like, shut up and sit down. So that's kind of, you know, what Clemson just did was like, hey, now hold on now, go sit at the little kids table. You ain't ready for this yet. No nonsense. How about the Venable hires, man? Just years and years and years ago. And just sometimes you got to get fortunate, Kirk, in this business. And the fortunate nature of Dabo getting, you know, Venables, and Venables not taking a head job and sticking around. And now he's got his son there with him playing some. And, you know, he's not going anywhere. And just, you know, he caught it. That's a great timing and to get a guy like Venables and a defensive mind and an aggressive nature guy, a guy that needs to get back coach for an interview, for God's sake. So I think just an amazing job all around by Clemson, and just further cementing why, you know, at the end of the season, we'll see that Clemson Tiger, you know, orange out there in the playoff.
So yeah. when you look at the ACC, and you briefly brought up Notre Dame and North Carolina, it's a shame that we won't see North Carolina on the regular season schedule for Clemson. Maybe we'll see them a little bit later on, if you get my drift. But yeah, we've got Notre Dame there against Clemson on November 7th in South Bend. Are these – because, listen, if there are two tables, Pollock, in your mind, Clemson's sitting there by themselves. How close?
Correct.
How close is Notre Dame and North Carolina to moving up or maybe getting a higher chair so they can adjust to get to the next table? Do we know enough Notre Dame and North Carolina yet?
They're still social distancing. They're still at least 6 feet away. I mean, they're still a good bit apart from the talent gap, the experience gap, the competitive nature gap, the winning gap, the completeness of both sides of the football and consistency gap for those teams is still a long ways apart. You know, we wanted so much to make it with, you know, before the season, you know, Malik Cunningham and Sam Howell and Ian Book and all these guys that we're going to watch and we're going to watch it. I remember they asked Kirk at game day at Louisville of, you know, like, is the gap closing? Is it going to be? No, it sure ain't. It's Clemson and everybody else. And it's Clemson and everybody else.
Yeah. I would say, as we've watched these teams play, that because North Carolina has some skill, they've got a quarterback, who can run, can especially throw. He's got playmakers around him. You know, I would think if North Carolina matched up with Clemson, that would be, as we sit here 3 weeks in, that would be the game that would be create the most excitement for an ACC championship. But they do got to go to South Bend in November, which is, you know, that's a game you definitely at least look at if you're going to look at their schedule and think, okay, who can at least compete with them? That's the one game, I guess, that stands out and makes you go, yeah, on the road, Notre Dame, night game, you know, that'll be a good test for them. But I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to Clemson just maintaining, you know, their own brand and avoiding that one game that they typically seem to have every year. North Carolina was that game last year. You know, that Syracuse, they went to the Carrier Dome on a Friday night a few years ago. They lost to Pitt at home. NC State gave them a scare. They've always had that one game that it's kind of inexplicable. So I don't know. They may have one of those on their schedule, but if they just keep the course and do what they do, it's going to be hard for anybody in that conference to hang around with them.
You mentioned that one game. I'm not saying it's going to be that one game, but you never know. I'm circling Halloween and BC because I think Jeff Hafley's done a really good job. If it's a freak game in 2020, you just never know.
That's my squad.
Right?
My squad. Yeah, BC. That's my super dog squad. They won a couple for me as underdogs, so I just said, I don't even care who they're playing. I'm just taking them again.
How excited were you when Pitt missed that extra point, homie?
I have no idea. Dude. You have no idea. And I don't even know who BC's playing this week, but guess who my super dog is?
You're riding them, Virginia Tech, by the way.
And by the way, they're an 11-point
underdog. I am three for three when I pick BC as a super dog. So I'm to the point now, I'm so far in last place. I'm picking BC the rest of the year if they're an underdog.
All right, we're going to ride it, man. Ride
it out.
Do whatever you can. Herbie, we'll let you go. But before then, I know College Game Day is going to be in Tuscaloosa. I'm going to get Pollock's thoughts on that matchup on Wednesday. What stands out here when we talk about, and Pollock brought it up earlier in the podcast, and it was a great thought about styles. Styles, you know, that they go into matchups. They make the matchups. But when you look at Georgia's defense and Alabama's offense, what do you think is going to be the difference in this game? Or is it going to be somebody from Alabama's defense stacked up against what we're going to see from Georgia? What will play out here in Tuscaloosa in your mind?
The only thing I know for sure is that the Mac Jones and the Alabama offense against the Georgia defense, that side of the ball is going to live up to its billing. Like that's what you're going to this game to watch. The other side of the ball may ultimately decide the outcome of the game. You know, like how Stetson Bennett with this new offense over the last couple of weeks, how they do against a defense that is reeling could ultimately, the ball's in his hands in the fourth quarter and they're down three or they're down four and they need to go win the game. That ultimately could decide the outcome. But I think David's 100% right when it comes to the style of Georgia with what they have. And how Monken wants to try to attack, it's very different from what Alabama has had to go up against and when they've had some issues, just because the quarterback play is different. You know, he's an athletic guy, but he's not running the kind of system that Alabama has struggled with. If I'm Monken, though, based on what I've seen on film of Alabama's defense, the kid is athletic, and I might reach into that a little bit more, and I might crank the tempo up a little bit more, because those are areas that they really struggled to defend last week. So they don't have a corral, but they do got a guy that's a better athlete than people want to give him credit. But I can't wait to watch that Georgia defense against the Bama offense, because that's going to be a heavyweight fight on that side.
It's going to be good, and looking forward to it. Let's just hope it that game, it'll be the game of the season so far, and let's hope it meets our expectations from what we saw this past weekend, because this past weekend felt like, all right, this is the first real college football weekend while we wait for the Big Ten, while we wait for the Pac-12, where we had some chaos but a lot of fun in between while waiting for it. Guys, appreciate it. Pollock, I'll talk to you on Wednesday. Herbie, have a great week. We'll see you on Saturday.
Okay. See you guys.
All right, dude.
Oh, that'll do it for this Monday, October 12th, College Football Podcast. Good stuff from Herb Street and Pollock. And a lot of good games. Again, like this past Saturday, just it felt right. A lot of chaos everywhere, a lot of fun everywhere. Let's hope it carries over to next weekend. And Wednesday, we'll be back with Pollock. We'll make our picks. We'll break down his dude of the week and the game to watch. Also, big thanks to Taylor Schwenk on the other side. Producing our podcast. And if you like this podcast and you want more of it, it always helps us with the feedback. I enjoy reading some of the reviews, so subscribe, rate, and review. And until then, if you want more football, social distance, wear a mask, be safe.